Coming to you live from a world of infinite recursion, I'm Tom Rich, and with me as always is coming to you live from a world of infinite recursion, I'm Tom Rich, and with me as always is coming to you live from a world of infinite recursion, I'm Tom Rich, and with me as always is coming to you live from a world of infinite recursion, I'm Tom Rich, and with me as always is coming to you live from a world of infinite recursion, I'm Tom Rich, and with me as always is coming to you live from a world of infinite recursion, I'm Tom Rich, and with me as always is coming to you live from a world of infinite recursion, I'm Tom Rich, and with me as always...
The Mildly Alarming Podcast.
Boop, boop, boo. Tucking toilet paper in my gunshot wound. Do, 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 do. Tucking half a roll of toilet paper in my gunshot wound. Do, 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 do.
Where did you get toilet paper?
From the toilet. I got the toilet paper from
disgusting.
The toilet.
Disgusting.
That's where I found it.
Disgusting.
Was where it was. But I had to put something in because...
I was saving that for later.
But the inside parts were coming into the outside place.
That was the plan.
Where the air is. And they're not... When they get the air on them, they change color and it's bad. You don't want that.
I'm going to just... Understanding of anatomy and medicine aside, let's move on.
Okay, but I a lot of it was out of me, so I'm
a little
confused.
Just don't bleed on the table.
But that's what the toilet paper's
or
for.
Or the microphone.
That's why I put it there.
Or the toilet paper.
What the? Listen, could I have a towel, maybe?
No. You can't get blood on... Do you know what happens when you get blood on a towel?
What happens when you get blood on a towel?
No, I was asking you.
I don't know either.
Well, let's not find out.
Well, we should, though, because it's coming out of me. And it's not nice.
Just cup your hands there and...
But there's two holes. There's one on one side and one on the other. I can't cup in two places at once. And it's coming out of both more or less equal.
You've already ruined the toilet paper, so I guess...
Can I have some more?
No.
It's not absorbing anymore. It's just there.
I have this wine cork. I just stick it in one of them, and then you only have to worry about the other one.
Ow! The cork hurts. I don't like the cork.
That's what they say. Cork hurts. Yeah.
You're not a nice person.
No.
Very unkind.
Are you ever going to begin the segment? This is the worst intro.
Welcome back to the Mildly Alarming Podcast. I'm Tom Rich, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Johannes, who may or may not be a hallucination at this point. I've lost a lot of blood. He shot me.
And I'm Johannes Stauffer.
And we're glad to have you on the show. So, Johannes.
Tom.
We're glad that you're here. Thank you for coming on the show to talk to us today.
Who is we?
Myself and also me.
Okay.
And we want to ask you your opinion. We want to know about your rock, paper, scissors career.
Uh-huh.
We understand that you are the Nevada, Idaho, and Montgomery rock, paper, scissors champion of the American South North.
Well, it's not actually all that impressive because there's not a lot of people who live in Nevada, Idaho. It's a very small town. But I did beat them all at rock, paper, scissors.
Well, that's good. Now, briefly explain, because our readers don't always get it, what rock, paper, and scissors are.
Well, in the context of the game, they are a big old rock, no less than 10 pounds.
Uh-huh.
Scissors, which are sort of like two knives stapled together. In fact, exactly that.
Mm-hmm.
And paper, just, you know... Like what you have wadded into your bullet wound there.
Yeah, we're going to have to deal with that shortly.
No.
It's
nope.
Yeah, it's a problem.
You can just bleed out. That's fine.
There's a significant situation happening over here vis-a-vis my innards.
And then in the game of rock, paper, scissors, or RPS, as its enthusiasts call it, that's actually true and not a joke, you choose one of these three items, and you just go to town. On your opponent or opponents. And whoever is left standing at the end wins.
I feel like the selection of paper is a weak move.
Yeah.
Fair. But in board gaming, mm-hmm. rock, paper, scissors refers to a kind of mechanic or a kind of structure in a game whereby you have a thing that trumps another thing, and that second thing trumps the third thing, and the third thing trumps the first thing. That manner of balancing where either explicitly, like in the game Rock, Paper, Scissors, where Rock just out and out beats Scissors, because you can break Scissors with a rock, or more subtly where Rock is very strong against Scissors, but a sufficient amount of Scissors can overcome Rock.
Right.
And we were thinking about this balancing mechanic, about this sort of trump card type thing where going down one path makes you strong in one circumstance but vulnerable in another, and how that plays into the design choices you make as part of the game, as you put the game together. And whether we've seen any of this in any of the board games you've played, whether explicitly or more broadly speaking, and also whether we still have the capacity to love in our hearts. Nah.
I still would imply that it was there in the first place.
Fair enough.
Still is also a thing in which you make liquor.
And liquor, as we all know,
is quicker.
I never understood that. If anything, it's slower to go down your throat than beer because it burns. It's got that burning. So you're going to drink it a little slower than you otherwise would. And you have less of it. So you're just going to sip.
Yeah. I don't remember what the rest of the saying is, but you're an idiot.
Fair.
So Rock, Paper, Scissors is an interesting, it's not interesting as a pure mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
To just look at it statistically, it's basically you have a 1 in 3 chance, right? Mm-hmm. That your opponent will throw something. There's a 33.3% chance in a computer generated model because they only have 3 things to choose from.
Right.
It only becomes interesting at its rawest form, where you're actually playing rock, paper, scissors.
Mm-hmm.
It only becomes interesting when you bring psychology into it.
So, like, the knowledge that most people will throw rock the first time, or so, I don't know if that's true, but... Or understanding how they're going to throw after their first throw, or
yeah,
that kind of thing.
There's a whole lot of... There's actually a lot of very interesting psychology in it, and a lot of people have tried to turn it to strategies for winning rock, paper, scissors, and some of them successfully. But what it means for board games is if you find yourself using this sort of thing as that very base level mechanic where one throws against the other to decide the outcome of combat or whatever, mm-hmm. You're really talking more about a sort of social engineering game than you are about a mechanic that has a whole lot of meaning or agency
sure.
on its own.
I think if you're going to use it literally, like, you know, strategy A trumps strategy B, trumps strategy C, trumps strategy A,
mm-hmm.
or plan A, you really need to, in order to make that engaging, you need some choice in how you, in which of those you proceed over multiple rounds or turns or units of the game.
Uh-huh.
And you need some way of interpreting what your opponents are doing
uh-huh.
to know what to make an educated guess about it. Then it becomes an interesting game of cat and mouse where you try to puzzle it out. Whereas if it's just random, if it's just purely rock, paper, scissors, I think you're right that it's not fun. There's nothing there. Like, I think we played a game once, not a Protospiel, but at some smaller event,
uh-huh.
which was, I think it was like Kick, Punch, Bite.
I vaguely remember that.
Yeah, and it was kind of a rock, paper, scissors mechanic. If a kick was more powerful than a punch, but a punch could beat a bite, but a bite could beat a kick for reasons that were unclear to me, or uh-huh. something like that. But the way it worked, it was designed to be a very fast, like, super light game, like one deck of micro cards type uh-huh. deal. But you ran into the same problem of you didn't have enough information to do much more than make a guess and go.
Right.
And I think there's a balance to be struck there where you have enough info that you're making an educated guess, but you don't have so much that it's a paralyzing chess situation where you're trying to plan everything out.
Yeah. Where you see it applied much more broadly in the way you were talking about, you know, an armor type or an armor class versus an attack type or whatever is in Pokemon. Pokemon and Pokemon cards. Pokemon, I believe, is probably the most absurdly broad and convoluted application of a rock, paper, scissors style
yeah.
mechanic currently, maybe possibly ever used, because they have the different types and your Pokemon has a type. It might be grass or water, and now I guess they have, so it can be a grass / poison type.
Mm-hmm.
And then it also has attacks that have a type that may or may not match its own type.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're pitching them against other Pokemon that have the same thing. And so you see it in the games, the handheld games, but also I believe in the card game, the Pokemon collectible card game. There's probably a similar thing in Magic, though not far drawn out.
Yeah, it's a different way of implementing them. But you're right, the different colors tend to counter and balance one another in different ways.
Yeah,
you used to see it a lot in the tower defense games that they used to make a lot in the Warcraft 3 map editors back in the Golden Age of tower defense games.
That was the only way for people who were not already game developers to make games, and lo, they did.
And of so many tower defenses, but you would see a lot of maps where the towers would have like a damage type they would give it, like fire or ice or whatever, and then that was strong against some enemies but weak against others. So you had to balance which towers you were using, and that's interesting to me, is having to like having strategies that are extremely powerful in some scenarios, but that suddenly become very weak, so you have to shore them up or work together as a team to make sure you cover the spread and that kind of thing.
They did a similar thing in the Diablo games.
Yeah.
Because you would often find you would have a weapon that did a certain type of damage that was very strong against something, so you might do a load of poison damage, and that was really great until you had to fight a skeleton that was immune to poison damage, and then suddenly you're hacking and getting destroyed.
D&D has hinted at this over the years and moved in that direction. I'm sure other tabletop games do it to a larger extent with bludgeoning, slashing, and piercing damage for your melee and ranged weapons. And they've never gone whole hog and been like, this thing is, you know, this type of thing is vulnerable to slashing but resistant to bludgeoning, and all, you know, the full spread of how that would work. But it's always felt like it should be interesting to have. The problem it's always had in D&D is that it's so much bookkeeping to keep track of what weapon type you're hitting with and that's the problem with board games in general for this type of thing, is that if you want to make it intricate enough to be interesting and to be meaningful for the player, it's a lot to keep track of.
Yeah.
But if you want to make it simple enough for the player, it's boring, like vanilla rock, paper, scissors.
Yeah. On the flip side, even in a computer game where it can be kept track of, you wind it up with these huge bloated systems like Pokemon, where there are hundreds of different matches of what is good and what is bad and what is indifferent toward a certain type and is good against a certain type. And then they change it slightly with each new release. So even if you've managed to wrap your brain around it for the blue and red versions of Pokemon, it's not the same in whatever the next pair of titles is that comes out. And I always liked the simpler ones, because for the most part, they kind of make sense. That poison damage wouldn't affect a skeleton. I know it seems absurd to say that makes sense, but at the same time, if you're already working in a fantasy mindset, I can see why you couldn't poison a skeleton. It has nothing left to poison. Or why, you know, some of the ones in Pokemon even originally made sense. You know, electric type is no good against rock type. Okay, fine. But then they start doing all these weird things, like if you have a water type and an ice type and they're different, should fire be strong or weak against ice? Because it melts the ice, but then the ice is water, and then does the water put out the fire now? What do you do with that? And so it's just arbitrary. So I think there's a point at which you can go way too complex with it, and then it's just impossible to figure out other than memorizing charts. And that's just too much, even in a computer game.
The other problem it runs into is, this is something I ran into playing Diablo 2, and it's kind of too... the computer game, it's kind of two interrelated problems. One end of the spectrum is it only matters, you know, you've got all of this intricate balancing of different elements, you know, fire damage versus this guy is great, but it's crap versus this guy and blah, blah, blah. But if you get to a point where it only matters at the margins.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, yeah, my fire damage did half damage to him, but it still did 500.
Oh, I see what you mean.
And so... whoopee, I can hit it, I can do it again easily, and it's not even a problem.
So there are games, the Borderlands games, I feel like, I guess depending on how you approach it, either did it well or did it terribly. They have their own sort of, not hierarchy, but weird star of what affects what and what doesn't affect others. With there's like fire, electric, corrosive, I think it's fire, electric, corrosive are the main ones. But then it's like strong against shields or strong against flesh or strong against robots or armor. And corrosive is great against robots, but no good against shields. And electric is great against shields, but no good against whatever. And they mostly make sense. But so what we ran into playing the game was I had this weapon that was extremely potently electrical damage or something that was no good against robots. And we came up to this point where we were fighting exclusively robots. I couldn't get through their shields. So if I played the game by myself, I couldn't get anywhere. There was nothing I could do. I needed someone else who had an electrical weapon to knock out their shields before I could damage them with corrosive or whatever it was. And it was interesting because it made you play a more rounded play style. And you were talking about D&D considering doing it, and I liked kind of the idea of having, even if it's just a rock, paper, scissors style, there are three and some work, because really, realistically, you can probably only pick one to be really good at, but then you are really reliant on your party for the other two, or maybe two to be mediocre at, but you still need someone else for those, for that third one. And I kind of like that in a game that is designed around team play, because it means you actually have to think about how you build your character and how the rest of your party or the people you play with build their characters so that you complement one another rather than just being like, we both have these absurd indestructible tanks that we choose to play together with sometimes, but it's just a competition to see who can deal the most damage in one blow every time.
Right, exactly.
And I think that's, in board games, probably the best application. I think it's a good way. We often struggle with how to force player interaction or how to make a team, you know, a cooperative game, not just a bunch of people who are all good working toward the same goal. Instead of, like, you know, you need to work together. You're not five people working individually toward the same goal. You are a team of people who need one another. They kind of try to do a similar thing. We're going pretty far afield of rock, paper, scissors now, but as far as like some strengths and some weaknesses in Arkham, they do an okay job of it, with like some people have money and other people don't, and you can trade money. Some people are good with magic and or whatever, you know, they have a strong stat for closing gates and other ones don't, but they can take more damage, that kind of thing. That's pretty far abstracted now from rock, paper, scissors, but I think kind of the root of it is similar in application, at least for team play.
You kind of hinted it to the other end of the spectrum I was talking about before, where, you know, in some cases it only matters if you're keeping score, the differences between the elements, because you get so powerful that it doesn't make a difference which one you hit with. They're still going to die.
Right.
Or you're still going to win.
Yeah.
You get the other end of the spectrum is if the balance is so, it's so swingy, one from the other, one element or one tool or one weapon type from the other, you can want to be like, oh, I specialized in ice magic. I'm the ice mage. And now I'm in the land of the Iceman.
I definitely did that in at least one of the Diablo games where I just really, really pushed hard on like fire or something. You get to the one level where everything is immune to fire. And it's like, oh, now this character is unusable.
Yep. You just can't proceed. You're like, oh, no, I just can't do anything at all. And that's boring. Nobody likes that situation.
Yeah.
That's bad. It's in co-op stuff, you should have situations where one player gets to shine. But it should be the case that player's getting to shine, not that everybody else is just sucking.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't want that.
Yep.
So it's a delicate balancing act, giving enough trump to the trump card, and I don't want to use that word because, you know, where it truly does overwhelm, but not so much that other options don't work or you wind up with only one valid choice at certain points.
You want to talk a little bit about the psychology of actual rock, paper, scissors?
Did you read up on it?
It's kind of fascinating.
Yeah, tell me about it.
I'm going to see what I can remember of it. I heard about this on a podcast, and I want to say it was the Good Job Brain podcast, but in my brief Google search, I couldn't find the thing I was looking for. But I did find, I believe, the article they were referencing in Psychology Today. And the thing that really stood out to me initially is that, so like we were talking about, statistically speaking, two computers playing rock, paper, scissors, there's equal chance that each opponent is going to throw rock, paper, or scissors. It should be a one-third chance for each of those throws. And there's a lot of more, you know, you can get into some kind of like trying to be sort of manipulative or social engineering-y about trying to fake out another player or something. But what's really interesting is in a large study of just games of rock, paper, scissors, probably with some people who were very deliberately trying to fake out an opponent and other people who were just throwing whatever they felt like throwing, they found that the statistical likelihood is actually very different. Well, not very different. It's about 35% each for rock and scissors. Mm-hmm. But paper is like 29%-ish. I know there's some missing percentage points. There's decimal places that I missed. But basically, paper is a considerably less likely throw, statistically speaking, in the game of rock, paper, scissors. And so it's actually potentially a strong play because people don't expect it.
Interesting.
You zoned out there for a minute. You with me?
Yes, I'm so with you. Sorry.
I kind of zoned out while I was talking. So there's this Psychology Today article, which we'll post in the show notes, The Surprising Psychology of Rock, Paper, Scissors. And it has a whole lot of what they call research-based strategies for victory. But they were just interesting points, I thought. And I'm not going to go through all of them. But so some of them, they're just talking about psychological points like rock is aggressive. Apparently, statistically, men tend to throw rock and tend to lead with rock. Mm-hmm. Scissors are also considered a little more aggressive. And then paper. And they think this part of why paper is so much less often thrown. It's mm-hmm. It seems subtle, but there's also something sort of in the human psyche or whatever about an open hand being not only peaceful, but sort of, what's the word I'm looking for?
Submissive?
Yeah. So if you're throwing, even if it's palm down, you know, throwing paper is an open hand. It's not defensive. It's just like you're putting yourself out there. And so it's much less likely to be the thing that you want to throw. There's a saying apparently in rock, paper, scissors, rock is for rookies because again, apparently rock is a very, very typical opening move for people who have not played a lot of rock, paper, scissors. And it's really, really weird when you start reading into this, how much people really think about rock, paper, scissors, like mm-hmm. really, really strategize about rock, paper, scissors.
But what they're going to throw.
What they're going to throw and who and how to fake out. And you know, what kind of person do you think this guy is? Does he look like a rock or does he look more like a scissors? Or like, you know, it's really, really, really bizarre. Mm-hmm. Their point six here, the heading is just the word manipulation. I don't think it was this article. I think it was another one I read or heard, but they were saying something like what a strong play can be to telegraph your moves, to literally be like, I'm going to throw scissors and then actually throw scissors. And it doesn't matter what it is because people are just like, no, he's faking. It's the whole like Princess Bride, yeah. Did you put the poison in my cup or in yours thing? They just like fake themselves out. But since I didn't do the research, I just quickly found this right before we started. I'll stop yammering about it. But if you're interested in this, well, the Psychology Today article is quite interesting.
There's a lot of points in games like that where you're looking at the other guy going, what are you doing? What are you doing? And it boils down to there's just a certain percentage of chance that you're right.
Yeah.
You know, there are a certain number of situations, right? But if you know that Gary always throws scissors, that's good information to have, unless Gary knows that too.
You know what screamingly obvious tabletop comparison we missed until right now?
We're idiots?
Yeah, but I meant to a game.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God. Cards.
Coup?
Yes, coup. Coup. Coup is...
Coup, yeah.
Is like...
Yeah,
rock, paper, scissors on steroids, and it comes down to the manipulation and bluffing is the thing.
Yeah, tricking them into thinking you have what you don't have, and you don't have what you do have.
The assassin. The yeah. It's been we need to play that game. I like that game in a while.
Which let's try to play it next time we get together.
Yeah, I forget what blocks what. The assassin is blocked by the.
I think it's the Contessa.
Contessa. Princess Contessa Luisa Francesca.
And then the Duke can get the three money and everybody claims to have him, but it's clear not everybody has him.
I'm going to use the Duke. Use the Duke. Oh, look, I have the Duke.
Yeah. Dang it!
Yeah, that I think is...
That's a fun game.
A beautiful
application of
both of the rock, paper, scissors, some things beat other things, and just straight out lying to one another.
Have we ever done an episode about Coup?
We have to have. We've definitely talked about it a lot. I don't know if we've ever dedicated an entire segment to it.
We should probably dedicate a segment to it at some point.
Okay.
Where should we? Are we at time? Is that the...
Yeah, close enough. If we have missed a screamingly obvious game that uses this mechanic, or if you just want to shout things at us on the internet, you can do that on Twitter at Mildly Alarming.
You can do it on email at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com.
You could do so in the comments section on the website at www.mildlyalarming.com or on facebook.com/mildlyalarmingshow.
Or just river dance your way into the arms of the angels. I'm hallucinating because I'm bleeding out. I'm dead now.
Finally. We'll be right back. Well, I will. Tom is dead. After this word from our sponsor.
And now, a message from the National Council of Guys Named Chad.
Hi, I'm a Chad. One of many Chads that you may have met in your life, sometimes without even knowing it. We're farmers, we're truckers, we're stay-at-home dads and lawyers, and occasionally guys who do interior design for doghouses. But how everyone sees us, how everyone assumes us to be, is as chachi frat bros. When you see my name on your caller ID, your mind immediately jumps to popped collars and shutter shades. And that hurts. I'm more than that. We, the Chads, are all more than that.
Take Chad here, a veterinarian specializing in sea turtles. Every day, he goes to the zoo and takes care of these majestic creatures, giving them medicine when they have turtle colds and rubbing their scaly turtle heads. Those turtles are his best friends, but when people hear his name, they assume that he's going to steal the turtles and take them back to his rancid flophouse, where the turtles will die because he is a Cretan. But he's not a Cretan. He's never even been to Crete. It's so bad that he thought about going by his middle name. But that's Chad, too, so his hands are kind of stuck there.
So please, the next time you need to mock that guy who came to a house party in college and puked on the textbook you left on the table, the next time you need to take a whack at guys who shout for Jaeger bombs like a featured rapper shouts his own name, the next time you need to substitute in a name so that your audience will instantly and viciously hate the person you're talking about, please, try something other than Chad. Maybe go with Todd or Bryce or even Kyle. Try something more modern, like Trace or Xander with an I. Doesn't that name just make you furious? But please, leave the Chads of the world alone. Haven't we suffered enough?
Welcome back to the Mildly Alarming Podcast. I'm Tom Rich.
And I'm Johannes Stauffer.
And we've mentioned our buddy Late Night on the show before. Late Night is a crazy person that we know or have known of. And he's worked up about something lately. He says, quote, "It's Halloween and your b****s are afraid of some wicked clowns walking around. You must be a gentrificator from some burbs out of state. Welcome to Detroit and it ain't even Devil's Night. Hashtags ICP, Esham, Wicked Detroit, and, for reasons that are unclear to me, Danny Brown."
Okay.
But that points us to our topic for the second half of the show tonight. Perhaps you've encountered this. Perhaps you've seen this in real life. Perhaps you've only seen it on the internet. Clowns? Just clowns? Like...
clowns.
A scourge of clowns o'er the land?
O'er the land.
I am not going to lie to you. I got up and went for a walk in the park in my town the other day.
Did you see a clown?
I didn't.
Were you dressed as a clown?
I was not.
Good.
But as I went through the kind of isolated wooded part of my route, I'm like, I am legitimately, honestly, on the lookout for clowns right now. Like, I'm watching my surroundings for clowns. I'm looking for clowns. I'm watching for clowns.
Well, now they're teaching these clown... not survivable, but awareness techniques, like listen for the clown call. It's sort of like a kind of noise.
Yeah.
If you hear that in the woods, if you see a tiny car that appears to be bursting with just floppy shoes and curly colored hair.
Yeah. That might be clowns in that car.
That might be full of clowns.
Yeah. You want to watch out for that. But there's a scourge of clowns across our great nation.
Yeah. Not just our great nation. It appears to have spread into the frozen north.
It's to the point, like, CNN is reporting on this. Real news agencies, too.
Yeah. In addition to CNN.
Suck it, Wolf Blitzer. CNN has an article, which we'll link, the Clown Scare, A Parent's Guide to the Clowns.
Wow.
The clowns are here and they won't go away. What started as a few amusing headlines in August has now ballooned into a full-blown clown epidemic.
Oh, a clown-pademic.
No one would blame you if you were a bit curious and perhaps even a little concerned.
So I came across this probably through Dig or Reddit or something in late August and shared the what I think is the first article with a lot of people. A clown appears to be trying to lure kids into woods in South Carolina.
I remember this.
Because it included one of my favorite pieces of non-journalistic writing in a piece of journalism. As a letter from the property manager to the tenants around this. And I would like to share that with you before we continue with our color commentary.
Please do.
There has been several conversation and a lot of complaints to the office regarding a clown or a person dressed in clown clothing taking children or trying to lure children in the woods. First and foremost, at Fleetwood Manor Apartments, children's safety is a top priority. At no time should a child be alone at night or walking in the roads or wooded areas at night. Also, if a person or persons are seen, you are to immediately call the police. Greenville County Police Department is aware of the situation and have been riding the property daily. Remember, there is a 10 p.m. curfew for the property, so to ensure your children's safety, please keep them in the house during night hours and make sure at all times children are supervised. Any more information that becomes regarding this issue will be sent out to all residents. Thank you, Property Manager.
A clown.
Or a person dressed in clown clothing.
So there are clowns now. We have clowns in our yards.
Just clowning it up.
There's clowns everywhere, yeah. This is weird, right? Like, this is a weird thing to happen, right?
It's not the first time, apparently.
Yeah, we did a little digging.
Came across a previous clown scare in 1981. There may have been one since then, but that's like the
documented
one. There's
probably been many clowns.
Everyone's
scares.
Mentioning.
I'm always scared of clowns.
Clowns are scary.
You know, and I was like, I was thinking to myself, what if I did see a clown while I was out for a walk? One of my many walks I take in the park. Like, what would I do? I'll tell you what I do. I would turn the hell around. I would go back. I would not pass that clown on the path. I don't care if that makes me a coward.
Makes you a clownist.
I'm not going near that clown. No, listen. No, you're not putting that evil on me. I see some clown in the woods. You know, I'm going to say, what do you want, clown? And if the clown does not give me a response that I think is appropriate, I'm not going near that clown. I'm going back. I'm sorry. If that makes me bigoted against clowns, that's fine.
Okay.
Freaking clowns.
Clowns. Clowning all the time.
Right? This is so bad that I've had no fewer in the last couple of weeks than three incidences of people in the regular world bringing up the clown issue.
Uh-huh.
Like the right world of people that aren't deeply defective like Johannes and I are. But like,
we're broken.
Just like normal people who go to jobs and do them.
We do jobs. Don't fire us, employers.
My boss doesn't listen to this, I'm sure. Maybe she does. I don't know. But I overheard some people in the next row of cubes over from me discussing the clown issue.
Uh-huh.
And one of them said, quote, a clown is gonna get shot.
I want that on a bumper sticker.
I believe she was implying that some clown was going to cross a line with somebody who had a gun.
Yes.
And that person would murder the clown.
A clown is going to get shot.
Knowing that that particular coworker as I do, I'm pretty sure she didn't mean she was going to go clown hunting, but...
You never know.
It's possible. The second incident was I was walking by my coworker Rhino Crocodile's cube, and I happened to see his screen as mm-hmm. I go by, and it's a video of a clown. So I stopped to watch.
Of course.
And it's this guy driving down the road in kind of a semi-rural area, and there's a clown walking down the grassy, you know, shoulder of the road.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a little way out from the road, so there's a little bit of distance, but the guy slows down a bit to video the clown, and the clown charges his car. Like, this guy in a bright red clown suit just comes running at his car, and the guy floors it to get out of there.
To be fair, if someone were driving past and I were just walking down the road and they slowed down to video me, I may also have charged their car, but I don't have the clown get up.
I was going to say, are you wearing a clown suit in this scenario? Because that makes a significant difference. You charge a car just as yourself? That's intimidating because you're a big guy. You charge the car in a clown suit? I assume I'm going to supernatural clown hell.
Yeah.
If you catch me. And the third incident was my, I teach a writing class, and my students were doing their little peer review things the other night, and I wandered by one group to listen in on their conversation for a moment, and one of them looks up and goes, "What do you think of this clown business?" I'm like, it's weird. It's weird and unpleasant, and I wish it would stop.
I was only just recently made aware of the fact that this is still going on. Like, I saw that, the clown article, in August, and then I saw a couple follow-ups, but they, I thought, were from the same place. And I'd heard people talking about it, but I just assumed they were talking about the thing from back in August.
Uh-huh.
So when you brought this up, and I was like, wait, no, what? This is still? There are more?
Yeah, it's an epidemic.
And I've been really enjoying just the absurd media headlines. And there is Atlas Obscura has an interactive clown sighting map. Like, just listen, this is the subtitle for this page. The interactive map above tracks over 100 clown sightings and threats across America beginning in early August. This map will be updated as more clown activity happens.
More clown activity.
Clown activity. You know, pies in the face, unicycles on a tightrope, that
and,
kind of thing.
And listen, like, if
cartwheels.
If a clown actually hurts somebody, this segment is no longer funny. So clowns, people dressing up as clowns, please don't ruin this for us.
I appreciate your addressing both clowns and people dressing in clown clothing.
Yeah, exactly. Don't wreck this. This is great. This is good stuff. There's a great headline over at Huffington Post. Minnesota police chief has a stern message for creepy clowns. Subtitled, Bobo, if you get this message, I offer the following.
Listen, good Bobo.
Well, let's go to the full message.
Oh, yes.
Here's the message that that was written on Facebook for Bobo the Clown. Bobo, if you get this message, I offer the following. I'm sorry, but you are not welcome at any of the schools for a delicious, nutritious lunch. You are, however, more than welcome to have lunch with me and my officers. It won't be as tasty, and the conversation probably a little too mature for you, but I have a very scary jail cell I think you would appreciate seeing. Looking forward to making your acquaintance, Chief of Police.
Incredible.
Like, does that... If you're the Chief of Police, like, you're a tough guy who clawed his way to the top of the police pyramid...
Uh-huh.
Does it make your day to be able to threaten a creepy clown? Or are you just like, why am I wasting my time with this?
I get the feeling from that guy that he enjoyed every word of that
letter
to Bobo.
If by some fluke of cosmic justice I were a chief of police, I would like nothing better than getting to lay down the harshness on some creepy clowns.
Doling out the harshness.
Yeah, exactly. I would have my officers on clown patrol 24/7. We'd lose our jobs because we wouldn't be doing what we were supposed to, but I tell you what, there would be no clowns in my town. We would take them back to clown town.
It would be a no clown town.
It'd be a no clown town.
It's a town with no clowns.
Those clowns would frown in my town.
They'd have to go back to clown town.
Downtown clown town.
Downtown clown town.
Yeah. Downtown clown town with their frown town.
Well, but they might be, I don't know. They might be happier back in Clown Town. Maybe they just got lost.
Well, are you implying that this is just some sort of big misunderstanding on the clown's part?
Maybe they've been migrating. The clowns migrate every year, starting around August, but something about cell phones has messed up their ability to home back in on Clown Town, and they're just lost in the woods.
And scaring people.
Yeah.
So...
According to The Verge, at some universities, students have become vigilante clown hunters.
Oh my God. I'm thinking of the people I knew when I was in college.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, Yeah, that's...
A clown gun get shot.
The clown gun get shot. Like, listen, clowns. If you're listening, clowns. Don't... Just be careful if you're in the UP around the college campuses up there, because those... Yeah, you're going to get shot. A lot... I'm just saying a lot of those trucks have shotguns in the beds. Or in the hands of the drivers. Just be careful, clowns. You're going to get yourself killed. It's going to happen. So...
I'm enjoying this article from The Verge.
Oh, you've got another one.
10 questions asked and answered. The 2016 clown panic. Are all kids scared of clowns? The answer is quite mixed. This is hard-hitting reporting. What about fear of clowns? Is that phobia a real thing? It is, quote, a real thing. I just, come on, The Verge. Come on, the media.
It's not just good in general.
And what does Insane Clown Posse have to say about all this?
Oh, I hope they have something to say about it.
The band recently made a statement about the Great Clown Panic. Quote, so there are no killer clowns. It's just jackasses being jackasses, wrote band member Jay Webb. So everyone relax! !
Okay, well.
Final line of this article. It's not every day I get to say this, but ICP is probably right.
Well, it's true. I mean, they would be the experts on murderous clowns, right? Like, that's their area.
Like, I think so.
Like, violent, like, one might say insane
clowns.
Now, but hold on, though. A lot of these clown sightings have been solitary clowns, just like one.
Right. Certainly not posse.
No, not even a clown pair, just one clown. So can we really trust that Violent J and Shaggy 2 Dope know what they're talking about here?
Well, in Sterling Heights, there were three clowns. Together with bats.
That's a posse.
It may have been the Insane Clown Posse. It's the right area.
I wouldn't know. I don't know what they look like, but it could be.
Like, they're from Michigan-ish, yeah,
they're
right?
They're from Detroit-ish. Yeah. From the Detroit area, yeah.
So, could have been them. Who knows?
Could have been. It could have been the Insane Clown Posse. I want to... So, whichever one of the Insane Clown guys that was, mm-hmm. you just quoted...
Like it was Violent J.
Was it Violent J? He wants us all to calm down. He just thinks it's jackasses being jackasses. Mm-hmm. But like, is he doing anything to stop this? Because I feel like he has some pull in the clown community as, you know, a famous clown.
Quote was kind of unclear. He may have been saying that the people who are upset about the clowns are the jackasses.
Oh.
He's like, clowns should be allowed to do their clown thing.
He's got like just like a clown rights thing going on.
Yeah, clown rights.
And he thinks the clown should just be allowed to be scary in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, Jay. That's a tough area. That's where your right to be creepy in the woods comes in contact with my right to not be scared of you in the woods, to have just a lovely walk in the park. You know, that's definitely, you know, there's an amendment to the Constitution we can apply here. I think, it's the Svelmth Amendment.
That sounds like a number.
Which states that no citizen of these states shall be subject to creepy clowns. I think James Madison pushed very hard for that amendment because he was scared of clowns. Thomas Jefferson dressed up like a clown sometimes.
You heard it here first, folks.
Thomas Jefferson was the original creepy clown. Terrifying clowns. Insane Clown Posse being right. I don't know what's going on this year.
The whole world has gone topsy-turvy.
One of those creepy clowns is running for president as... Boom! Hard-hitting political humor. Quite.
Yes. 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 I'm done now.
I'm glad. It was unpleasant.
Yes.
No.
Well, if you're a clown, creepy or otherwise,
we absolutely want to interview
we
on the
so
air.
So want to hear
we,
from you.
We want if you're a juggalo, we want to hear from you too.
Yeah, we especially want, if you have a copy of the Road to Shangri-La board game that we could play.
Really, we just love creepy clowns. I think that's kind of a running theme on the show.
That seems to be what has happened.
Yeah, it's where our lives have gone. So Juggalos, people dressing up like clowns and scaring people in the woods, and those are the two groups. Call us. We want to talk to you.
We will give you your voice on the Webernets.
Yeah, you will be heard by tens of people.
And you can make that contact with us, that first contact, because apparently we're space aliens. On Twitter at Mildly Alarming.
You can do it on email at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com.
You can do it on the website at www.mildlyalarming.com or on facebook.com/mildlyalarmingshow. You can rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, and TuneIn Radio.
Or apparently you guys just show up places and scare the poop out of people. So if we run into one of you, we'll ask and see if you want to come on the show.
If you were a creepy clown, you may be outside the window listening to us right now.
We're good.
Good. Well, if the clowns don't get us first, we'll be back next week.
Good night.
We interrupt your regularly scheduled program with an important electoral news update. I'm Reginald St. Kevin.
And I'm Chep Holstein. Good evening.
New developments in the presidential campaign as audio emerged of Donald Trump having an off-color conversation on a bus. Mr. Trump can be heard saying, quote, "You can grab her right by the..." Hang on. Can we say this? Like, on the air? Live?
I believe that we can, Reg. That's how reading works.
Thank you, Chep. Can we get Jim in here? Jim? Producer? Yeah, Jim? Jim? Can we say this? Yeah, I know he said it, but can we? Or do we have to, I don't know, call it the P word? Sure, I know it's journalism and that's how it works, but it makes me uncomfortable, you know? I know, it doesn't make Chep uncomfortable. Whatever. Can we use a euphemism? A different euphemism. Well, I don't know, maybe move up the anatomy a bit? Go with the short and curlies.
Mine are actually quite straight, Reg. And long.
Thank you, Chep.
I brush them for 6 hours a day. It's how they keep that shine and luster.
I'm just saying I don't want to say it, Jim. I don't care if that shrieking orange rage goblin said it. He says a lot of things I don't want to say, like, I think it's a good idea to have this hair, and I should be on people's televisions.
We're on television?
Did you not know that this whole time?
It would appear that I did not.
Well, that's the time we have. This has been a mildly alarming radio news breaking election news electoral break. I'm Reginald St. Kevin.
And I'm a pretty, pretty princess. Good evening.
That's probably true.
It is. Good evening.